This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful, and it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout, and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today. You'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 266.
Hello, hello, this is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, we talk about that awkward thing where you say goodbye to someone but still walk in the same direction. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and what I do in those situations is I just keep talking. I keep talking well after they're gone so that my voice fades as they walk away. That's just what I do. Today, we're going to talk about the census. We're going to talk about Texas. We're going to talk about the state of homophobia and hip hop and pop culture. And we're going to talk about the grocery store ethnic food aisle. Oh my God, today's panel, folks. Oh, what an incredible panel. You have heard her on the show before. You heard her all over NPR. She's absolutely an icon in the world of radio and in the world of The Moth and in the world of stand-up. She just spans icondom in many genres. She's a new comedy album coming out very soon, so be on the lookout for that. And dates all over the place where you can catch her live. It is the one and only Ophira Eisenberg. Hey, Ophira.
Hello, Nagin. Thank you.
So good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And I also have to say that I saw a photo of one of your orchids.
Yes.
And that you saved its life with a piece of tape. And I was really impressed because I was given an orchid on the day of my daughter's birth.
Uh-huh.
And I was not able to save its life. And it's still, the pile of dirt that was an orchid is still sitting in my kitchen as if it's going to sprout an orchid one day.
Okay, and well, I'm telling you right now, if there was dirt involved, then you and the orchid had no chance. So, but just saying. And you know, to that end, look forward, everybody, because I'm realizing there's orchid content needed in the world, and so I'm putting together a whole bunch of videos that are dealing with your orchids and some jokes, because orchids. Because you know, when I first started stand up, actually, someone said to me, and I always thought about this, about doing comedy, and they said, you know, when you do comedy, you can't be an orchid, always waiting for the perfect conditions in order to bloom. You have to be a weed.
Which is true.
It's true.
I think we could all say that, yeah, in entertainment in general. Which brings me to our next panelist. Oh my God. So excited to have her on the show for the very first time. You've seen her on RuPaul's Drag Race. You've seen her on the UK Drag Race. She has a new single out called Love Like This, and I have been bopping around the house to this tune. It is exactly up my alley. We're going to play it at the end of the show. She has a fantastic podcast with Bob the Drag Queen called Sibling Rivalry, which is actually headlining the Life is Beautiful Festival in Las Vegas. She's just everywhere all the time, as well she should, because she's fantastic. Folks, it is Monet Exchange. Hey, Monet.
Oh my God. Hello, Nagin. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. I truly have been just like reveling to your song, and then also watching the video in which you are like gorgeously in like a Caribbean waters, I think.
Yes. Well, you know, I spent like, I didn't eat bread for like 2 weeks. I was like, girl, for this video, we're gonna look real snatched. And I was messing around, and I was on Instagram story when we were filming, and I was like, oh my God, having such a great time in Jamaica here for me. Filming the video, but girl, we were right up in Malibu. We were right next to Cher, just filming our little video, having fun.
Well, I was convinced, and you know, the bread, the not eating bread, if that's what it takes to look like that, then let me start right now. All right, folks, let us get into it with topic number one. Okay, so I want to talk about the census today, but before we do that, MIT's living wage calculator that estimates the minimum income necessary for a single person to cover their living expenses in every state and stay above the poverty line without outside help, that's the metric, they just came out with this new living wage calculator. And so I just wanted to ask you guys a little quiz, a little pop quiz.
Ooh.
What do you think is the most expensive place to live in America?
San Francisco, hands down.
No, well, okay, actually, let me revise that. It has to be a state or, you know, like a territory.
Oh, I get what you're saying here. Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, so
what territory. Uh-huh. Just to make sure we can say D.C., just to
yes,
to make
it's
sure.
D.C., because it is D.C.
Oh,
it is,
wow,
in fact, D.C.
Really?
Yeah, I know, I was surprised. But, I mean, look, Monet, you're not wrong. California, as a state, is in the top four, right?
It's like, yeah, yeah.
So D.C., it takes $41,850 a year before taxes to live above the poverty line.
What? And then what are you doing in D.C.? What are you spending your money on?
Gold blocks is what you need to have in every apartment. It's like one of the requirements. So that's the thing with
that
D.C. that you didn't know.
Gotcha.
The second most expensive state, I actually, is totally unsurprising, and yet I was surprised, is Hawaii.
Really? You know? Hawaii? You know, that's interesting because I have recently in the past year have been getting a lot of my news from TikTok, and I'm not ashamed to say so. And this one TikToker, she was saying in the 1950s, maybe, her grandmother bought their house for about $25,000. Now that same house is now valued at $1.8 million.
Insane.
And, you know, people are trying to get them to sell it, but she's like, you know, the native people of Hawaii, if they sell their homes, they literally cannot buy anything else because everything on the island is getting so, and all the islands is getting so expensive. So they're getting pushed out of their own homes. It's so crazy. Gentrification, course, you know, inevitable.
Yeah, and also watch the show White Lotus for more on those things.
I've heard about this. I haven't watched it yet.
Also,
there's a lot of like, you know, neo-colonialist undergirding tones in the show that you may enjoy.
Okay.
Ophir, you were going to say?
I was just going to say, and here's the darker sense. I just imagine too, Hawaii, you know, being an island, there's many islands, but all being islands, in the ocean and the climate and they have volcanoes, which, you know, I think most of them are inactive, but there are a couple. Probably pretty expensive to buy insurance. I wonder if that's part of that calculator.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, completely. But also, well, it's funny. I will say one thing about Hawaii is that I've been once, and food truck culture, which I don't, you know, when they're talking, you know, White Lotus didn't explore this. It was set in like the Four Seasons in Kauai or something like that. But like food truck culture is like really amazing there. Like I had some of the best ever meals at just like various food trucks. Anyway, that is neither here nor there, but it is a mildly cheaper way of eating like a really fantastic, well done meal.
Portland also has great food trucks. I love the food trucks in Portland.
I love a food truck. Yeah, I don't know what it is about me and a food truck, but I'm very just drawn to them. Okay, so
I was going to say I like food trucks too, but I just like food. So wherever there is food, I'm just involved.
Right, right. It might be the food that's drawing me to the food truck.
Where's New York on the list? Where's the New York on the list?
Oh, right. That's a very good question. It's number 3 on the list. So it's D.C., Hawaii, it's number 4. California, $38,823 a year. And New York is number 4, $38,719. So we're not that bad. Now, my next question is, what do you think is the cheapest state of the union?
I'm going to say, because of those darn potatoes, Idaho.
Interesting. No. I'm going to say, I don't know. Idaho. I'm doing a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
Here.
Please.
New Mexico.
Incorrect.
Okay.
It is South Dakota.
Swear I was going to say South Dakota. I know everyone always says, I was going to say that. I literally was going to say South Dakota.
I forgot South Dakota existed. So that makes sense.
South Dakota. North Dakota. Looks like North Dakota's number 2.
Does anyone even live there? What? There's literally nothing in North Dakota.
I've performed once in South Dakota. Okay. I had a fantastic show, actually, in South Dakota. They were extremely happy to have me there. That's where the Nagin Farsad fan base is. Little known fact is just in South Dakota, nowhere else. Okay, well, this is just a little entree to get us into the census. So the official census figures came out, and we learned we're becoming a more urban and metropolitan nation. The Democratic metropolitan areas are seeing new arrivals. They're like growing in size. The rural Republican heartland areas are steadily losing residents. So those are just a first couple of headlines from the census. Were you surprised at all to hear about that?
I mean, I'm not surprised because, you know, there was some book that we read in high school, and high school was so long ago, I don't remember, but it was basically, our teacher was very esoteric and she was not the most conventional type of teacher that we did.
But in high school, books were called like history, you know what I mean?
Right,
books, like, didn't have
right, true.
Like terribly memorable names. It would be right. History of America.
Go ahead. And it was a book that was basically explaining kind of what's happening now, that as that America, like, we're like this theory of like one race, right? There is going to be so, like, everyone will be just mixing and blending, and soon whiteness will dissipate a bit as we have come to know it. So
yeah,
hearing these studies, I mean, I feel like we're right on track for that. And I think that the more that we break down all of these barriers of race, well, try to at least, and dismantle all of those systemic points of view that include some things of racism and things of that sort, I think that the more that we break all that down, the more that we're just gonna, people, like, race is just gonna flow, and people just gonna, you know, it's all just
right.
gonna be
we're all just like a vague color,
you know, right? I mean? you know, yeah, this is not shocking to me at all.
Yeah, I remember it must have been 3 years ago reading this article that was, I think it was almost written from an alarmist point of view, which was like, in 40 years, white people are going to be a minority in America,
right? Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And I was just laughing, going like, you know, it will be the only culture that nobody will want to appropriate. Right? No one's going to be like, that Cardi B song needs more clarinet. You know? But then I was also thinking, as you know, because the census is, you know, showing that if the trend continues, as we're talking about, that white people will be a minority. And in a weird way, white people being a minority will be the final act of appropriation.
That's hilarious. Is that a bit? I love that.
I don't know. It's like, I was just thinking about it. Maybe I'll try it as a bit. I feel like if I said that at a standard comedy club, there would be a lot of icy stares. Of like, you know, I don't understand the words.
That joke is going to go over really well, unlike the anthropology like lecture circuit. You know what I mean? You hold on to that for that. Yeah,
there yeah, you go. Yeah. I think that'll go over really well in South Dakota. I really do. For
yeah,
sure.
Poor audience.
Totally. Where my fans are. Yeah, so Monet, you kind of talked about this a little bit, but, you know, we also learned that Americans identify as multiracial, and as the mom of a Black and Iranian baby, I just want to say you're welcome. Like, her response on that census is part of a here's the actual statistic. A whopping 33.8 million people identified as being of two or more races.
Wow.
And then here's what's crazy, up from 9 million in 2010. Like, that's an insane difference.
Yeah.
While people who identify as white alone fell by 8.6%.
Wow.
And one of the things that I thought was really interesting about this is part of the reason that number is so high compared to 2010 is because they revised the census. And I want to go ahead and credit myself for that revision because I wrote about this in my book, How to Make White People Laugh, still available wherever books are sold. Support your local independent bookstores. But I talked about this, like, why for years did we not allow people to just specifically say what race and ethnicity they were? The options were so limiting before.
Yeah.
I never knew where to put myself because it didn't have my thing in there. And now there's just more options. So people can finally be specific about, you know, about what they are, which is amazing. And it's it also between 2010 and 2020, the nation's under 18 population registered an absolute decline of more than 1 million. Bitches aren't having as many babies.
I'm about to say less kids running around. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, can you guess what is the most childless major city in America?
The most childless major city.
Wow. Yeah, like the lowest under 18 population in America.
I mean, I would have formally said New York City, whether that's wrong or right, but that has definitely changed.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely less strollers in Park Slope. Like, before, I remember, you couldn't throw a stone without hitting 18 strollers walking through Park Slope. I'm
going to say, guys, it's not New York.
Okay.
Ugh.
New York is spitting them out.
Wow. Let's say Portland.
It is San Francisco.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was going to be like, any place that's hard to stroll.
Okay, ladies, go with me. And I know I said this before. I was literally gonna say San Francisco, but I decided not to.
San Francisco last time. And you were wrong. It's like, how many times can you rein into San Francisco?
You got shy about it.
Also, so this is, I also found, was really interesting. There's a place in Florida called The Villages, right? Which is a retirement community. Mm-hmm. And it is officially the fastest growing metro area.
The Villages.
It's about 45 minutes drive from Orlando. The population jumped from 93,000 residents to 130,000 residents.
Are older people having more children, or are more older people going to The Villages?
Yeah, there are no children in The Villages.
Got it.
It's a retirement community. You'll be surprised to learn, Ophira, it's very conservative.
Wait a second. First, you're telling me that old people are conservative. Ophira. You're telling me old people are conservative.
The perfect audience to workshop that joke.
Yeah. But yeah, it's... What's fascinating too is just that people have been saying the boomer population, the boomer, they're aging. Yes, they're aging. And places like The Villages shows that they're aging and that they need a place to go hang out that looks like a little town in which they don't have to interact with anyone unlike them. And that's what's happening at The Villages. Also, it also explains part of the reason Florida gets another congressional seat.
God.
So the top headline of these censuses is that it's decent news for Democrats, right? Because they're basically going to redraw all of our maps based on this census information.
Right.
However, Republicans still control the drawing of a majority of the districts. So it's like in places. So, for example, there were gains in population in Texas and a new seat in Texas. And a lot of those gains are going to be like for Democratic districts or whatever, but the Republicans still control drawing that map, right? So it's like it's a mixed bag of the positive and negative. But also, it's going to be a little harder because there's so many more people in these metro areas. It's going to be harder to draw crazy salamander-looking fish district, right? So what do you guys suspect is going to happen in this, like, fight, this race of drawing district?
I have no stock or any faith or hope because
I have no faith or hope
in an election where we have control of the House, is split right down the middle in the Senate, and we control the executive branch, and we still can't get shit done. I'm like, so what? We get some more congressional seats and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How are the Dems really going to put in the work to affect change in a major way, like how the Republicans do? So I'm just like, sure, redraw them and do all the things, but how are we really going to get things done? Because we have not seemed to pull through in the past in these 8 months since the election.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about this and hearing what you're saying, Monet, it just occurred to me that I was like, what? This is going to take so much time. The amount of things that need to be acted upon quickly. I mean, I agree. This is what the census is for, and then you redraw the map. It is going to take time, and it's going to take fighting, and it's going to take a mixed bag. Why don't we just rename, based on all of this? Why don't we just rename America Mixed Bag, and be done with it?
honestly,
wouldn't it be so fun if countries just did fun names? I feel this as like a new phase in international diplomacy.
I love that.
Love that idea. Well, we don't know what's gonna happen, because here's the thing: like, if they do a map that's too crazy, that's so absolutely bonkers, where they're trying to dilute the Democratic vote into a district, then those maps will be contested. They'll go to court, and it'll hold up the election for 2022, right?
Yeah.
So this is
that could be a plan.
And can we all afford to hold up these elections? Blah blah blah. Also, I just want to say, there's some redistricting that is also going to happen in places like New York State, where they're already talking about taking out a district or two of that are Republican held. So it's not like, Republican map drawers are the only ones that benefit. Also, fuck Democratic map drawers and fuck Republican map drawers. It should be an independent commission drawing these maps that has nothing to do with partisan politics. Oh my God. How is this even reasonable ever at all? Nuts.
Something else you could go to Canada for.
Ophira, I feel like you use Fake the Nation as a Canada propaganda platform. And I want to say,
the one and only
propaganda
platform for Canada.
I mean, I just want to say, I'll allow it.
Thank
because
you.
You're my friend, but you're treading on thin ice and not too thin to play ice hockey on, all right?
Warning received. Warning received.
Okay, well, let's move on to topic number 1.5, which is a ridiculous, like, side topic, which is that with huge swaths of the country being majority-minority, by the way, what is that term, majority-minority? Because wouldn't that just mean
the majority?
Yeah, just like, majority of people are this other thing. Anyways, it's fine. But okay, so I wanted to talk, I was on MSNBC the other day. It's not a big deal. Sometimes they call me to say things on television. Don't worry about it. But I was on that Vaunted channel, They asked me about this phenomenon of the ethnic aisle at the grocery store, which I thought was really funny, and I hadn't thought of it at all. My whole life, I hadn't really thought of it. It's just a fixture of life, right? The ethnic aisle. And I was thinking, it's so strange now that we're a majority, that, places like California are majority minority. What can we say? Just, I don't even know what to say for other, like, non-white majority, whatever. What is the point? Like, should there be an ethnic food? Like, is it still awesome that we have an ethic food aisle, right, in grocery stores? Is it like something to be celebrated? Or should it just be like those foods are mainstream now because come on, you guys, and like put it in the other aisles where the other foods are? Like, where do you stand on this hard-hitting issue that I'm bringing up?
So, you know, I find it interesting that when I go to grocery stores in different cities, the kind of things they put in their ethnic aisle. And this is just I remember being just upstate New York. We were just upstate New York, and it was around Passover. And I made some gefilte fish, and I wanted horseradish. I wanted horseradish, like the kind that comes in a bottle, yeah.
Yes.
And so I went to the grocery store and I couldn't find it. I don't know. I was looking in near the condiments, and then I was looking near spices. And then I said to someone that worked there, where would I find horseradish in a bottle? And she said, either try ethnic foods or where the cocktail mix is. And I was like,
what? Wait, because it goes in Bloody Marys?
I guess so.
Okay.
Oh. I was like, wait, what?
Bloody Marys doesn't make any sense.
And I went to their ethnic aisle, and I was like, what's in their ethnic aisle? And, you know, it was like soy sauce was in their ethnic aisle.
Sure, yeah.
And I just remember thinking, I'll get a soy sauce from
an ethnic aisle.
Really?
No, it should be like with the other, like, why is soy sauce in the ethnic aisle? It's so strange.
It's so heavily utilized. You know what's made the crossover, though, is like hummus.
Right.
I feel like, also because it has to be refrigerated, but I feel like we used to go from like having a little blip of a hummus option to like there are full refrigerators of hummus.
Oh, it's crazy. Like fleets, literally fleets of hummus. Every type of hummus imaginable.
I know.
Yeah. Exactly. And then
horseradish hummus.
Even though my country has nothing to do with hummus in particular, I feel a blush of pride every time I walk by one of those overzealous hummus offerings.
Shouldn't croissants be in the ethnic aisle?
I don't
croissants.
The other confusing thing from a category, categorization thing is like, we need a Dewey Decimal, this situation, because I feel like it's now getting too complicated because like, you know, I don't know where, I feel like there's Goya products in regular aisles that are clearly like, kind of from or geared towards Mexican cuisine, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I kind of like the, and I'm going to make up a word here, nichosity of the of the ethnic aisle, because I'm like, I know that I can go to this place and find these things, whereas if Jack, who works at a Ralph's or Vaughn's or Key Food, whatever it is trying to put the ethnic thing, the things from the ethnic aisle and integrate it with the other things, he's going to put it in the wrong place. He's going to end up putting the jerk seasoning by the milk, and I'll never find it. So you know what? I like the ethnic aisle sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I think from a just pure like organizational standpoint, where also I have to say the ethnic aisle to me is the fun browsing aisle.
I know, it's true.
Yeah.
I'm always like, what's cool here?
What is that? Yeah. Oh, I don't know what that thing is. What is it? What do you use it for? You know what I mean?
For
sure. So, folks, I feel like we've sort of come down on keep the ethnic aisle. maybe, I don't know, but make it...
bigger.
I would like, make it bigger? Oh, yeah, I'll take a make it bigger, and I'll take a... make it like just fun, like the most fun place in the supermarket.
Well, maybe when white people become a minority, the ethnic aisle will be for mayonnaise.
Hamburgers, yes. Yeah. That's what that's
hamburger that's helper, the mayonnaise.
That's the follow up to your original joke. Folks, we're seeing Ophira build her set for the anthropology lecture circuit. It's really fantastic.
Anthropology.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about other things. Today's show is sponsored by Pros. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of
Pro's custom hair care and skincare. I tried the skincare just recently. Is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year. using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
And we are back. And before we get into it, I wanted to thank the people of Fake the Nation for posting your Apple podcast reviews. Cynthia in NYC writes, "It's a regular in my podcast rotation. Love this podcast. Especially enjoyed Marcela Arguella on the latest episode. You're not the only one. I got a lot of positive responses about her, and I loved her, so we're definitely going to have her back." I also want to thank OliveJuice2012, who says, "Nagin is getting me through it all. Hilarious and fantastic progressive discussion. I love the show and everything it brings." Oh my God, my heart swoons. I'm so grateful for you guys posting these Apple Podcast reviews. Please, if you have a minute, go review us on Apple Podcasts, because it really, really does help people find the show. And it just also makes me blush and makes me really happy. So please take a second to give us your stars and your, you know, whatever emoji you want to say. If you can incorporate the poop emoji in a positive way, I'd be so thrilled. You know what I mean? Because then I'd know it's just like a me and you inside poop emoji joke. All right, let us move on to the next topic. So we weren't planning on talking about this, but I do want to get a quick sense from you guys. Governor Greg Abbott, because this was announced yesterday before, and we're taping here on a Wednesday. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, came down with the coronavirus. And he's fully vaccinated. He's showing no symptoms, but he is also getting the mononuclear antibody therapy Regeneron, because I guess he's scared. I don't know. Whatever. But I don't know. Is it uncharitable that my first instinct, whenever these people who are like very anti-mask get coronavirus?
No. Oh, absolutely. I just laugh.
I mean, this is what we've think? Honestly, this is what we've been reduced to. I think a different Ophira is a more generous Ophira than an Ophira that has been through 18 months of a global pandemic and has witnessed people being sick and dying. And then a whole bunch of people going, "No, that's not true." Like, you just, you just go, "Well, I guess it has to happen to you." I hate that that's my human response, but that is my human response. So when someone that people are listening to and making terrible global health decisions based on, and by the way, he was vaccinated. Also, I would just like, you know, all of these people are vaccinated. All of these people are vaccinated, yet they're spewing still this anti-science bullshit. And the fact that there was a breakthrough, because obviously that is possible, and the anti-masking is just like, when is it? I mean, I never want to be like, does someone you know have to die for you to just think about this?
Right, and he must be kind of consistently putting himself indoors with other unvaccinated people who he then is like, don't get the vaccine. I don't care. We have the lowest vaccination rate in the country. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like, he's basically setting himself up, even though the chances are still very low to get a breakthrough infection. He's just consistently setting himself up to be one of the very low odd people because he is so anti it all, you know? What do you think, Monet?
I think that when you are a person like this governor, you are the sole reason why tens of thousands of people have not gotten the vaccine. When you are the catalyst for all of that, you reap what you sow and you get what you get, and you don't get upset. So you have this thing, and I mean, do I feel guilty that I feel happy? Because I'm not gonna lie, I feel happy this happened to him. Do I feel guilty about that? Absolutely not. And I think, and I hope that from that his constituents or whoever it is who is still listening to him realize that they need to get the vaccine, that this was hopefully a wake-up call in some capacity to those folks.
But then, you know, this thing happens where I feel like people that I know who are anti-vaxxers, and they have their whole host of reasons, are going to look at that and go, well, see, there are therapeutic, there's medicine and therapeutic things that work to help you recover from COVID if you get it. So what's the problem?
And also the flip side, because I have anti-vaxxer friends too, and it literally boggles my mind. Like, I literally feel like, ugh. And I know they're going to be like, well, you see, he got the vaccine and he still got it.
And so
there are going to be a host of things, of reasons why people won't get it now because he got it.
But the thing I hate about that, he got the vaccine, he still got it argument is that, yeah, he's not going to go to the hospital. You know what I mean? He got the vaccine. Even though the odds are against you getting it, he still managed to get it. And nothing's going to happen. It's like, that's what the vaccine does. It means you won't die. That's what it does.
That's right.
Yeah. So that argument makes me insane. All right, folks, let me know, how did you react when you heard about the news? And are we uncharitable monsters? or are we just regular people?
Survey says? Number one answer, yes. Yeah.
Well, as long as, right, you know, in a world where everyone just gets to go, well, I'm right. Sometimes we get to go, we're right too, okay? But we're right this time.
So says Ophira, uncharitable monster. Okay, let us move on to our next topic. Okay, so this one, I'm going to lean heavily on you, Monet, because the Black community and hip hop have evolved when it comes to homophobia and transphobia. But to what extent? I mean, I feel like we've seen some changes. You're in the music world. You have a new single out, which we're going to play at the end of the episode. And I love when we get to do that when we have musicians on. And you've been really vocal about trans and queer activism. So, you know, where is homophobia in the hip hop and pop music world now?
You know, I think there is still so much work to be done. Yes, there has been some progress, but I think that lots of Black folks and Black households and Black families, I think a lot of this stems, and I've said this so many times publicly, but it stems from religion. It's a lot of people in the Black community are still under the chains of religion and how religion makes them think about gay folk, lesbians, trans folk, non-binary folk. They are still under that, and if they cannot break those shackles of that, and it's so sad to see. And you know, I'm someone, I love hip hop music and I love R&B music and I love reggae, and honestly that's why I put out the single I did, because growing up I grew up in St. Lucia, and reggae and dance hall, those are like really big parts of my our family dynamic, is what we listened to at family gatherings, at whatever it was. And I remember one day I was like 12 or 13. I was listening to a Beanie Man song, and the lyrics were literally like, "Take that gay person, kill them, shoot them. He can't be with us." Like it was like, you know, like those things were in the lyrics. I remember seeing like, oh my God. And so when it fast forward to 2020 and we're recording this song, I was like, you know what? I want to make a gay ass fucking reggae song and just be like, you don't get to ruin my experience from such a beautiful art form because of your homophobia and your transphobia and all that stuff. So I just love when I see queer folk making hip hop and reggae and being like, just because you want to muddy the waters with these stupid sentiments and all this deleterious thought and all that garbage, that doesn't mean that I can't celebrate this and make it my own for my community. So there's still so much work to be done, but I think that the more that we show up and the more that we say, hey, we're not going, and the more that we make Black folk understand that when we say Black Lives Matter, we're talking about all Black lives, which are trans, which are gay, which are lesbian, which are non-binary, which are women, which are like all of us. So I think it's just trying to hammer that point home, and I don't know what the course is to make people understand. But I think the more that we don't disappear and the more that we don't fade away and the more that we don't wave the white flag and be like, okay, we're sorry, the more that we're like, no, we're here, we're not going anywhere, is hopefully it will start to hit harder at some point.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason this is coming up is because there's this like DaBaby controversy where he basically said at some kind of festival in Miami, mm-hmm. you know, he had this weird moment where he was telling people in the audience to like light their cell phones if they didn't show up with HIV and AIDS, and that they would die within 2 or 3 weeks if they had that. And, you know, just like, it was just really, first of all, incorrect, like wildly incorrect information, misinformation, right?
Yeah.
And then, and it was just so homophobic. And then came this sort of, the DaBaby and then the anti-DaBaby camps of thought. And there were some people that said, the argument in defense of DaBaby is if, like, I think T.I. was the first one to say this. He said, if you're allowed, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but like, if you're allowed to be proud of being queer, I'm allowed to have opinions about it. And what do you think of that kind of argument? Which I think, you know, at first glance, you're like, well, that's true. If someone's allowed to say this, then another person's allowed to say that. You know what I mean? Like, what do you say to that argument, to that line of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm like, listen, people are allowed to say and do whatever they want, but then also you have to accept the repercussions and what happens after that. So DaBaby can say, T.I.'s right, he can say whatever he wants. But the general public, we absolutely have the right to boycott him, to not want him to perform at festivals, to stop his bag, to stop him from making money from doing these things, for us to support him as, you know, of our free will. So yeah, he can say what he wants, but he can't be mad at this blowback and the reaction that he is getting from a large segment of the hip hop community. Which, I mean, I'm so pleased to see so many artists speaking out and stepping and you know, and being like, no, this is bad behavior and he deserves it. Because when it like first happened the first day, I was like, girl, no one's gonna care. So, like, one person's gonna say something, and then it's gonna be like nothing happened. So I'm really surprised that it's sticking, and people are still talking about it, and really holding him accountable, and not just the homophobic stuff, but the misogyny. There was that video that came out. He was walking on a stage. He was walking to perform on some stage, and a female fan who obviously loves him, like, you know, you see like one of your big favorite artists coming down. So she pulls out her phone to like take a video, and he literally punches her in the side of her head. Like, he's just a horrible, disgusting person. And so I hope he does not have a career after this, like, at all. I hope that his biggest thing is performing for twos and threes of people and stuff. Dakota someday. That's my hope. Or the Villages in Florida. Maybe you can perform there. That would be great.
Right.
DaBaby at the Villages.
Dinner theater with DaBaby.
Oh, he'll fit in so well. So Ophira, like, you're a mom, right? And the funny thing is, like, some of this stuff reminds me of the lessons that we teach our kids of, like, don't say shitty things, right? It just feels so ridiculous in that way. Like, you know, the argument of, well, you could say, well, then I could say whatever. What would you say if it was your kid saying this shit, right?
Well, and just like, hate is hate. I mean, yes, you can say whatever you want, but I think we can classify what is being said. And hate, especially against a marginalized community or a minority or any underrepresented voices, that is a very specific kind of hate. And that is what we are, in theory, all working against right now. We are like, we are trying to bring up these voices, greater visibility, greater power. So then it becomes very reactionary, and you just see basically the worst side of the power structures in society. But, I mean, that's what I hear. I just fear masculine fear. That's what I hear.
It's funny, too, because I'm always like, you literally didn't have to say any of that your live stage show in Miami. Like, what? Did you just want people to light up their cell phones? There's so many non-homophobic ways to get people to light up their cell phones.
Yeah, like a better one would be like, who didn't get their stimulus check? The entire arena would be lit up, okay?
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Who's unemployed?
It's just like, if you remove this one area of discourse, homophobia and transphobia, this one area of discourse from your songwriting and your stage act, Like, I will give you 700 other things you could talk about. Like, you know, why do you even lean on that? It's like, it's insane to me that people even fall back on it. It's just so bizarre to me. But so, Monet, my final question to you about this is, we read a piece in Vulture by Craig Jenkins in which he writes that, you know, for example, the rapper Young Ma is appreciated because straight male hip hop fans see themselves in her verses about romancing women. And there's enough ambiguity and fluidity in Tyler, the Creator's music, for example, to give a listener a plausible deniability about whether the song they're listening to is about falling in love with a man or not. So I guess my question to you, do you feel like you have to walk a tightrope about being explicit when it comes, you know, the way that Young Ma may seem, or Tyler, the Creator, may seem to some audiences as not being explicit or having an acceptable level of gayness or something? You know what I mean?
No. I go full throttle. I'm like, there is so much of that. There is, I feel like there is a lot of ambiguity, and there is a lot of heterosexual and heteronormative music. So I'm like, I want to make gay ass queer music for those people. And just like queer folk bop to heteronormative shit all the time, why can't they bop to queer shit? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, just because you are singing the song about me kissing another guy doesn't mean you're doing it. You're just celebrating the song and the love and the romance. So just like queer people have had to do it for so long, why can't hetero people do it for us?
Oh, but Monet, I heard that if you sing along to a gay song, you become gay.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Well, that's the secret. That's the case. Oh my God, you just ruined it. Now they know, Nikki. Now they'll know.
Wouldn't that be great?
I know that was the last. I said that was the last thing, but here's the last thing, actually. And Ophira, this again goes back to like being a mom. When Lil Nas X came out with his industry baby song in the video, I have to mention Lil Nas X. People kept saying, because it was like, I don't know, whatever, explicit about being gay or something. Which I feel ridiculous to even say that, but a lot of people are like, well, this isn't appropriate for kids. Like, you can be gay all you want, but this isn't appropriate for kids. What do you think of that argument? Which is really common. I hear, you know, I feel like I remember in the 90s when I was a kid and people were talking about like this, you know, these rap songs aren't appropriate for kids.
The ones with the hate would be the ones that are not appropriate for kids.
That would be the ones.
Yeah. The ones of people like celebrating who they are. Those are the ones that are appropriate for your children to watch.
Right.
And love.
It's also just like, do we expect rappers to be writing for Sesame Street? I don't understand. Like, what is the expectation here?
You know what's not appropriate to kids? Your lack of parenting right now. That's what's not appropriate. Like, get involved. Watch it together and have a discussion, but don't be like, this is obviously that music is not being pumped out specifically to 9-year-olds.
Right. You're right.
Right.
Any reason. That just shows you how grappling with these arguments for something. Yeah. I know it's not appropriate to children. My goodness.
Okay, folks, that is the end of the show. What I would love for the people of Fake the Nation is to be able to follow you and all of the wonderful things you do. Ophira, where do they do that?
You could follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Ophira E. That's Ophira. And then my website is just my full name, OphiraEisenberg.com, and it has tour dates and all the stuff.
So many tour dates, so many opportunities to see this woman perform live. You absolutely should. She just completely brings down the house every time. I've never seen her not. So you're in for a massive treat if you go out and see a live show. Monet Exchange, where do people find you?
People can find me on all socials at Monet Exchange. That's M-O-N-E-T, the letter X, and the word change on Instagram, on Twitter. I've recently upped my TikTok game, and it's pretty fierce, I must say.
All right.
Also Sibling Rivalry Podcast. You can look that up and to hear me and Bob the Drag Queen talk about things, for everything from Black Lives Matter to why is the red Kool-Aid not the same flavor as it was 20 years ago. We talk about all the things. So
burning issues. And Mona, can you tell us the song that we're going to end the show on?
Yes, it was my summer single called Love Like This. The video is very sexy. Just ask Nagin. She agrees.
Oh my God, so and sexy.
it's just a very queer, gay, reggae R&B vibe. And you can listen to it while you're cleaning the house. You can listen to it while you and your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your partner are just at home and having a little whatever it is. It's the perfect song to set the perfect vibe.
Oh my God, it's such a summer jam. I love it so much. Folks, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. My column has a new piece out in the Progressive magazine. It's about my inability to use chopsticks. It is ridiculous. And I would love to thank everyone who makes this show possible. That's our producer, Julia Linden, our sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, all the wonderful people at HeadGum. The theme music is written by Gabby Alter. Again, don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find it. It helps the algorithm thingy that makes podcasting world happen. It helps that. So please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And you can email us at fakethenation@headgum.com if you have any questions or comments or suggestions for topics or guests. You can join the Patreon for bonus content and so much more. Again, that's at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And we'll be back in your earballs next week. That I'm paradise. Let me be an island, destination my hand. Palm trees and white sand. Baby, rub up on me skin to skin. Let it be the sweetest sin. Come now, I need a little taste. I'll supply my darling. That was a HeadGum podcast.